Boker Tov, Boker Tov. The custom of adding leaves to your dining room table for Seder night was not invented in the 20th or 21st century. Seder night was always a large family experience. And going back to the days of Beit HaMikdash, it was probably was several family experience all in one, because the Korban Pesach, which was essentially lamb chops, sounds good, right? Was not the basic staple, was not the main course of the meal of Seder night. It was the dessert. It was the afikoman. When you eat the matzah of the afikoman, after you had already eaten matzah and maror, and then again matzah and maror in the sandwich, and then you have a meal, a Yom Tov meal, and then, you know, they're going to serve the dessert, a piece of matzah, which is matzah tafikoman. How many people eat it with gusto, with great enthusiasm? The only reason you eat the matzah afikoman is for the mitzvah. If it wouldn't be a mitzvah to eat the matzah afikoman, nobody would touch it. And you have to make sure you leave a little room for the matzah afikoman. But the matzah afikoman is eaten, in place of the Korban Pesach, which was at the tail end of the meal, and not more than a kazayit. It wasn't a lot of meat. To the extent that one keves, one shepsalah, one Korban Pesach would be adequate for several families. And what they would do is, the Mishnah uses the word minui. Minui today in modern Hebrew means subscription. So you subscribe to a newspaper or a magazine, but then you are like in on it together. You subscribe several families together on one Korban Pesach. So nobody brought a Korban Pesach as a solo. You brought it as a group. It was a group offering. And that was a sharing experience, which is extremely important. We'll get to it soon. That point. And perhaps as a Zecher LeMikdash, we've continued after Churban HaBayit of having the Seder table, an extended family, sometimes friends and neighbors and whatever type of experience. That's all Zecher LeMikdash. So it expresses itself by putting in a few extra leaves in the dining room table. Most probably opening it up to its maximum, so to accommodate whatever the amount of people you're going to have for Seder night. Well, so there's the Magid. There's a discussion of Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim that goes on. There's no halacha of a stopwatch of how long or how short, you know, Magid should be. What's interesting is that the Gemara does deal with the scenario of a person making a Seder on his own or perhaps on her own. It can happen. As they say, the last 2,000 years, Hayu Dvarim Olam, it has happened. I happen to know some people who are in scenarios where they made Leila Seder alone. It can happen in the army, by the way, where a soldier is in some outpost alone and it's Seder night. And the chaplaincy, the Rabbanut HaTzva'it, we remember when I was involved in it, so we have these little kits. It's like a very like a rectangular, small shoebox of sort, where you open it up like a Kellogg's cornflakes mini box. You know, the traveling cornflakes or Rice Krispies, where you eat it out of the box. And it's printed in the cardboard on the bottom. It's printed the Seder plate. And little plastic bags, you get your maror and charoisus and your karpas, and there were three matzahs in it, and a haggadah, and a nice white kippah that said Rabbanut HaTzva'it, you know, and you're all set. And we used to call it Leila Seder Manot Krav. Manot Krav means battle rations. That's the phrase that's used for battle rations. God forbid, we go to war, you have to eat also. So, you know, you can't have a gourmet meal on the battlefield. So this is Leila Seder Manot Krav. And you can run your own Seder, and it's all put together. It's basically there. There was some grape juice there, maybe no wine, but it was grape juice and a cup, and it didn't have the shear of the Chazon Ish, but it was still adequate for a reviyit of grape juice four times over. And the question is, how do you fulfill the mitzvah of Vigadata Levincha? You shall relate to your children. Now, you can, and certainly Chazal did this, expand the word Levanecha. It could mean your children, of course. It could mean your grandchildren. It could mean others around the table. You can take the word Levanecha and just expand it as widely as you'd like to expand it. Students, Banim and Talmidim go together. But one thing is clear. If you're alone, so there's no Levanecha there. So perhaps you're excused from the mitzvah of Sipo Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Who are you going to tell the story to? Who are you going to ask the questions to? So this led the Rambam to figure out that most probably there has to be a different pasuk that's the operative pasuk of the mitzvah. Because if you ask a general audience, we should have done this earlier, what's the pasuk for the mitzvah of Sipo Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Most people will blurt out Vigadata Levincha. And if you take a look in source number one, the author of the Sefer Chinuch, that's exactly what he does. Chinuch is the student of the Ramban, about 100 years after the Rambam. L'saper b'inyan yitziat Mitzrayim b'leil chamishah sar b'nisan, to speak about, to relate the story of the Exodus from Egypt on the night of the 15th of Nisan. Kol echad kifi tzachut l'shano. Everyone according to his linguistic ability, which means the halakha never came to say how long and how deep and how analytical. Every person has his own, her own level of intelligence and manner of articulation. It's a very subjective call. Lefi tzachut l'shano. But nevertheless, it's a mitzvah. Ulehalel, l'shabeach Hashem yitbarach, to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hakol ha'nisim shasa lanu sham, all the miracles that He performed for us there. Shenemar, as it says, v'gadita levincha. Now, years ago we studied Sefer Chinuch here as part of our regular shiurim. I pointed out that many, many times the author of the Sefer Chinuch, who remains anonymous because it's a lengthy, lengthy series of letters from a father to a son, so that the son, who's a teenager, should have something to talk about on Shabbat afternoon instead of playing marbles with his friends. So he's the forerunner of the Parshas HaShavua pages that you pick up today on Friday afternoon in Shul. And that's what the Sefer Chinuch was. And when a father writes to the son, you don't sign off your name. So we never really knew who's the author of the Sefer Chinuch. It's fascinating. Now, the Sefer Chinuch's book is built, every single mitzvah has different subcategories. One is the definition of the mitzvah. One is some of the details of the halacha of the mitzvah. One is the rationale of the mitzvah, ta'amei mitzvot. And the last is, when or if this mitzvah is in order today, it's enforced today or not, or why. Perhaps it's limited to some of the population, not to everybody, just for Kohanim, or just for Leviim, or just for not Kohanim, whatever, just men, women, whatever, all kinds of limitations. The most important reason that we study Sefer Chinuch today is for that third category. Ta'amei mitzvot is exactly what we dealt with here in the Shir, at least 10, 12 years ago. And that's the main reason. But in terms of the first section, which I just read now, L'saper b'inyan yitziat Mitzrayim, as a matter of fact, I'm looking at the page and I see all four categories right in front of me now. The second paragraph is V'inyan HaMitzvah, this is the mitzvah detail. The third category is M'shorshei HaMitzvah, that's the mitzvah rationale. And the last part is the last line where it says Dinei HaMitzvah. B'scharim min hakevot, men and women are obligated in this mitzvah. B'chol makom, b'chol zman, no matter where and when. It has nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash being up and running. It has nothing to do with the other mitzvot, whether they're enforced or not. Vover aleha bitel aseh, somebody who does not fulfill this mitzvah has violated a positive commandment. Fine. So we have all four categories here. But I'm looking at the top line again. L'saper binyan yitziat Mitzrayim. Sefer HaChinuch will most likely copy the Hebrew translation of the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot, Book of Mitzvot. We've already said that the Rambam's Book of Mitzvot was written in Judeo-Arabic, but it was translated by the Ibn Tibbon family. The version that I use is Rav Kapach's modern translation already. But nevertheless, that's the Hebrew that we read. We're not reading Judeo-Arabic. The author of Sefer Chinuch also uses a translation, Hebrew translation, and you can see it because the phraseology of the Sefer Chinuch in his presentation of the mitzvah in definition usually matches. It's for sure a paraphrase, and more often than not, a quote. But it's a quote from the translation of the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvot. And there, the Rambam uses the pasuk "Vigadat Levincha." That's true, and that's not a surprise. That's what we all thought is the reason. Now, if you just jump to source number two, which is the halachot in the Mishneh Torah, the Yad Chazaka, Hilchot Chametz Matzah, Perek Zayin, 7th chapter, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam starts as follows: Mitzvat Asei Shel Torah, positive commandment in the Torah, biblical commandment. To relate the story of the wonders of the exodus of our forefathers from Egypt on the night of the 15th of Nisan, Shene'emar, as it says, and now we're expecting to see, Vigadat Levincha, but we don't. We see another pasuk. Shene'emar, as it says in Shmot Yud Gimel, at the end of Parshat Bo, Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yitzatem mimitzrayim. Remember the day that you exited from Egypt. Kimosha Amar, Shenemar, as it says in Shmot Kaf, which is the Aseret HaDibrot in Parshat Yitro, Zachorit Yom HaShabbat. Zachorit Yom HaShabbat. What exactly is the Rambam telling us here? What is he telling us? He's giving us a different source for the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziyat Mitzrayim. The Pasuk doesn't say that you're supposed to speak and relate. The mitzvah says you're supposed to remember. Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yitzatem mimitzrayim. You should remember the day. All right, I remembered it. I have it in my head. So Rambam says, this zachor doesn't mean don't forget, but remember it in the intellectual sense, in the intelligent sense. It means relate to it, articulate it. Because there's another zachor in the Chumash that also means articulation. And it's the mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night. Zachor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho. That zachor doesn't mean you should remember that today is Shabbat and it's not Thursday. You should speak about it. Now how do we know that zachor means articulation? There, the Rambam already dealt with this in Hilchot Shabbat, that there's an oral tradition. If not for the oral tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, that Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho means articulation, we never would have known it. I'll give another example. With there, Chazal were able to put their finger on a pasuk that indicated that Zachor has got to mean something more than just to remember. Amalek. Zachor et Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. So we know that there's an annual mitzvah to articulate the Zechirat Amalek. How do you know that it's articulation? Because at the end of that parasha, it says, Lo tishkach, don't forget. So it says, Timchet zech amalek v'tachat ha-shamayim, lo tishkach, don't forget. So don't forget means to remember. It's the same thing, basically. One's a negative presentation, one's a positive, but basically means the same thing. So if the Torah already says, Lo tishkach, which means you're not going to forget about it, what does Zahor mean? Zahor has to mean something else. So then your oral tradition comes in and says, it means to articulate. Or as the Gemara says, Zachor bepeh, lo tishkach belev. Which means you remember by your mouth, we articulate, and lo tishkach belev, you don't forget about it. So with Shabbat, Zachor Yom Shabbat Kacho, is the mitzvah of Kiddush, which means articulate, and that's the Zachor. And the Zachor Zachor of Parshat Boch, Shmot Yudimu, Zachor Yom Zeh, Shetzetem Mitzrayim, also means articulating. And then, we're going to get back to this in a second. Uminayin, Shebalel Chamisha Asar, how do you know that this is on the 15th? Maybe I should remember and articulate the story of Mitzrayim in the month of Kislev or the month of Shvat. How do you know it's on the 15th of Nisan? Talmud Lamar, Vigadat Levincha Bayomahu, Leimor Bavurze, Bisha'a Shiyesh Matzah Umaror Munachim Lefanecha. When are you engaged in the storytelling of Yitzhak Mitzrayim? When matzah and maror are in front of you, which means when is matzah and maror munachim lefanecha? Seder night. Now we know this drasha from the Haggadah. The Haggadah knows it from the Mechilta, from the Medrash on Sefer Shmot. And that is after the four sons, the Sheno de Lishol, Ad Petachlo, Shenemar, Vigadah Levincha. And then it says, Yachol me Rosh Chodesh. Maybe this mitzvah commences from Rosh Chodesh, of relating the story of Mitzrayim. Yesterday we should have started telling the story. Talmud Lamar, Bayomahu. No, on that day. Only on that day. Vigadat Levincha, Bayomahu. Yochel Mibod Yom. Maybe we're already supposed to, during the daytime, Here the question is, which daytime are we talking about? The daytime of the 14th or the daytime of the 15th? It makes no difference. No, Talmud Lomar, Bavur Zeh. Because of this. What's this? V'shah shematza umaror munachim lefanecha. You know, this word, Bavur Zeh, led to a custom that when we say matzah zu she'anu ochlim, we point to the matzah, lift up the matzah, maror zeh she'anu ochlim. And there's a version of this medrash found in an Ashkenazi source called Shibole Aleket that preserved the old version. It says, "B'sha'ah she'pesach matzah umaror munachim lefanecha," which means when the Beit HaMikdash stood and there was a Korban Pesach, so the language was, "B'sha'ah she'pesach matzah umaror munachim lefanecha." When all of the mitzvot are sitting on the table, munachim lefanecha is what we call the Seder plate. Seder plate, the kara. And they're there waiting for these mitzvot to be fulfilled. Then, and means the night of the Seder, that's when you have the mitzvah of relating the story of Mitzrayim. And the Rambam just abbreviates that whole medrash here, where he says, "V'gadat levincha v'yomahu le'mor bavur zeh, b'sha'a sheyesh matzah umaror, munachim lefanecha." Period. Because the mitzvah of Sipu Yetziyat Mitzrayim, relating the story of Mitzrayim, is linked to the mitzvot of the night, Pesach Matzah Umaror. Even though Pesach we don't have today, but it's still, nevertheless, it's linked to the mitzvah of Pesach Matzah Umaror. And because women were always involved in the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach and eating Matzah and Maror, therefore, there's a biblical obligation for women to be involved in the mitzvah of Sipu Yetziyat Mitzrayim. That's what led the Sefer Chinuch in the last line of source number one to say, "V'noheget bizcharim v'nekevot." That's why men and women are both obligated in the mitzvah. Which means that while women may be very concerned during the Seder that the Knedlach are warming up nicely, leave the warming up to somebody else. You're Talmidot Chachamim, and you're supposed to be involved in the discussion and the... There are many. Try to reflect back to the time that you were young girls at the Seder. Did your family, did your parents, did they involve you? Were your mothers involved in the discussion of the Seder? I mean, I'm not embarrassed to say that in my house growing up, my mother wasn't terribly involved in discussion. My sister always felt that she was somehow left out, and and I think about it, and really, it wasn't fair. It just wasn't fair. It wasn't fair, it was insensitive, except that in those days, it wasn't called insensitive. It was called the norm. It was called the norm. But in case you haven't figured it out yet, things have changed. In case you haven't figured it out yet. Right. Like, I think one of my daughters will also let her husband have a word here and there. Boy, have things changed. Not going to name which one because I think it's all three. Yeah. So I stress that this is a mitzvah, although it's a mitzvah that's bound by time. Mitzvah tasei shahazman grama. Nevertheless, women are obligated. And they're obligated in mitzvah of eating matzah. Why? It's also mitzvah tasei shahazman grama. Because the Chazal understood that there's linkage between matzah and chametz. Whoever is obliged to guard the home from chametz, and men and women are obliged to guard the home from chametz, have the mitzvah of eating matzah. The Gemara uses the expression, "Kol sheyeshno bebal tochal chametz, yeshno bebal tochal matzah." Whoever has the aveira of eating chametz has the mitzvah of eating matzah. And last night in a shir, I just pointed out that the people who like to look for illusions, remazim, so the word matzah and chametz are actually the same letters, but they're not the same letters. There's chet mem tzadik and there's mem tzadik hey. So the tzadik and hey are the same, but one is a chet, one is a hey. But in Medrash, aleph, a hey and chet are interchangeable letters. I can give you many examples of that. So in the world of remez, it works. That chet mem tzadik chametz and mem tzadik hey, matzah, are really the same letters. So even though it's jumbled, but the halakha is that only the five species of grain that can become chametz can create a matzah. You can't create a matzah on something that can't become chametz. So on cornstarch, which might be kidney, fine, but if it's not something that can become chametz, So you can't bake a cornstarch-based matzah. It's not going to work. Now, if somebody has a gluten issue, you have to eat gluten-free, like one of my grandsons. So today they bake, actually it's imported from England, but they bake oat matzah, shibboleth shual. Not cheap, but at least it had its content of gluten is minuscule, and unless a person has a hyper reaction, allergic reaction to even minuscule, most people with celiac can eat, you know, at least a kezayit of the oat matzahs. So that's recommended, if that's the case. Okay, and then the Rambam continues, v'afal pi she'ein lo ben, a person doesn't have a son at home, afilu chachamim gdolim, even if they're great scholars, chayvim l'saper b'tziyah Mitzrayim, v'chol ha'marich b'dvarim she'eru, v'shehayu harei zeh mishubach, whoever adds and continues, you know, the more the merrier, and so on. This is not just a mitzvah. We say in Yiddish, yoytzeh zayin, l'tzeit yedei chavoteinu, just to fulfill an obligation. There's no kizayit of measure of sipu yitzia Mitzrayim. You're supposed to elaborate, and we'll see what the nature of this elaboration is. But what you see from all this Rambam is the Rambam did not use as the primary source Vigadat Alevincha, because most probably was concerned with the issue of if you're alone. And the Rambam goes on later to say it, to spell it out, that a person's alone. So the fact that the primary pasuk, principal pasuk, is something else, it's not Vigadat Alevincha, but it's Zachorat Yom HaZeh Asher Yetzeh Mitzrayim, like Kiddush. So a person's making Friday night meal alone, of course you make Kiddush. Nobody's going to say, just because you're alone, you don't make Kiddush. So if you're alone, you have Sipu Yetzeh Mitzrayim, and you ask the questions to yourself. The Gemara says that, by the way, that you can ask yourself the questions. I forgot to shut off my phone. One second. Okay. So you ask the questions to yourself, and you can make a seder by yourself. Now, a lot of people, the last 800 years, have been dealing with the issue of where does the Rambam get his information from? See, the Rambam writes his Sefer HaMitzvot, Book of Mitzvot, and he basically tells us from which Midrash Halacha he's taken, he's derived the idea that this pasuk means a mitzvah. But in the Mishnah Torah, there are no sources. There's no footnoting. Can you imagine submitting a doctoral dissertation at the university? And it's a wonderful dissertation, except there's no footnoting, there's no bibliography, and the professor asks you, so where is this all this information from? He says, smoke alai, trust me, you know. It's like when you bring the car into the garage, you want to know what's wrong, and the garage of the Mosachnik says, smoke alai. Then you know you're in big trouble. It's when the surgeon tells you, smoke alai, then you're also in big trouble. Smoke alai. The Rambam says, smoke, you know, trust me. But he got into big trouble, a lot of criticism, because of this smoke alai, trust me. He didn't write sources. So for 800 years, great commentators of the Rambam are struggling to figure out, most probably took it from this Gemara. Sometimes it's painfully obvious because it's straightforward Gemara. Sometimes it's not in the Gemara, it's in the Yerushalmi. Sometimes it's not in Yerushalmi, it's a Mechilta, it's a Midrash Halacha. Sometimes you can figure it out, and sometimes the commentaries of the Rambam argue as to where they think the Rambam took it from. Fine, so it's all speculation. And with having said all that, we've arrived at the 20th century, specifically not 21st, and we still didn't know. There were a handful of cases in the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam where you can see that the commentaries are really groping in the darkness. Where did he get this from? And this is one of the examples that they just didn't have a handle on where the Rambam took this connection to Zechorot Yom HaShabbat HaKadosho. Did he make it up? Most probably not. He would have said so, because he said that anything that is his own, he will say something like Nirali, Yireli, Ani Omer, some type of expression that indicates this is my chidush. So here it's obvious he got it from somewhere, but that didn't stop many of the great achronim of the last 500 years to come up with great ideas of connecting the mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night with Sipu Yitzia Mitzrayim. You know, many a Shabbos HaGol drasha revolved around this Rambam and trying to figure out what the connection was. The 20th century brought about a rescue to the situation of where the Rambam got it from. Because in the 1890s, the discovery was made in Cairo, in an old synagogue in Fustat, in the Boydom. The two nuns, they found the Gniza fragments, but more than fragments, it was like tons of material. And they brought back a few pages to Dr. Solomon Schechter to England, who identified it right away as halachic material, and they sent an expedition, and they cleaned out the voidim. All the material is still in, I think it's in Cambridge, and there, the scholars till this very day have deciphered maybe a quarter of the materials. Anybody looking to do a master's dissertation in Jewish studies, all you have to do is just take a few pages and decipher it, you have your master's. You want to do something more serious with it, you get a doctorate. There's a lot of Gnisa material sitting and waiting for people, scholars, to unveil and unravel and to really figure out. But there was a sefer that all of a sudden, you know, why would something be in a Gnisa? Because the pages were old, pages got ripped and so on. So a lot of times the problem with the Gnisa is you have from one sefer, a page here, a page there, where the scholars pounced on the university and there was a chaplop, everybody just grabbed. So sometimes you can have the same sefer, one page is still in England, and one is at the Hebrew U in Yerushalayim, and one went to St. Petersburg in Moscow, in Russia, and one went to New York City, you know, into JTS at the Yeshiva University, you know. And then you today there's internet, today everything, there's a project, it's called the Gnisa Project. So you subscribe to it, and you can just go online, and you can see what's available. You know, Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, you can get a catalog of all the Gnisa fragments that have been cataloged. It's unbelievable. But once upon a time, this was very, very, very difficult. So in 1915, 16, there was a great Rosh Yeshiva in Berlin, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, of the Beit Midrash LeRabbanim al Shema Rav Hildesheimer. The Hildesheimer Rabbina Seminar, where he was a forerunner of the Sridi Eish of Rav Weinberg, Chi Yaakov Weinberg. So David Zvi Hoffman, who was a biblical commentator, among other things, he was also a great posek, Shelot Tshuvot Malamed LaHoil, and he was a Rosh Yeshiva. So he identified a section of the Gnisa fragments as the Mechilta de Rashbi. What's Mechilta de Rashbi? Mechilta is the name of the Medrash Halacha in Sefer Shmot. Whenever we say Mechilta, without any appellation, it means the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Ishmael. We do know that there were two schools of thought in the days of Chazal of Medrash Halacha. One was Rabbi Ishmael and one was Rabbi Akiva. What do you mean two schools of thought? What were the tools that were used to bring out the halakha from the pasuk? The most famous set of rules are Rabbi Ishmael, because they were printed in the Siddur before Pesukei Dezimra. Rabbi Ishmael Omer, Shlosh Hashem Midot Shatar Redreshet, Kal V'chomer, Gzera Shavah, Klal Leprat, Klal Leprat Uklal. It's very nice. Until V'chein Shnei Ketuvim Ha'machishim Zeh, Ad Sheva Kaduv HaShlishi Ve'achriya Beneihem. Kaddish. What were these 13 principles? 13 principles of how to figure out tools of operation. The thing is that there's a parallel list, and it's in the name of a student of Rabbi Akiva, his name is Rabbi Yosef Glili, printed in some of the Shas Vilna under the name of 32 Midot Chaturan Adreshet of Rabbi Yosef Glili, and the principal Midah tool is called Ribuy and Mi'ut. Additions, something comes to add, or something comes to delete. Ribuy and mi'ut. Now, anybody that remembers anything about his or her study of Gemara knows that the word lima'et or lerabot are household words. We use it all the time in the Shas. That this comes to add, and this word comes to take away, and that's how we figure out the parameters of a particular mitzvah or avera. Lerabot and lima'et. All those are Rabbi Akiva's rules. Klal uprat uklal of Rabbi Ishmael are rarities. Occasionally it shows up in Baba Kama, occasionally. But they're rarities. We don't think klal uprat uklal. We don't think in those categories. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva's Beit Midrash became the dominant Beit Midrash of Torah Shebaal Peh. There was a dominant and a recessive, like you have in genetics. And Rabbi Akiva was the dominant. And Rabbi Akiva, he kicks off the Mishnah, and he doesn't finish it, he's executed, but his student Rabbi Meir continues the project, and his student Rabbi Yehuda Nasi completes the project. This is all Mishnat Rabbi Akiva. And Mishnat Rabbi Akiva gets carried into the days of the Amoraim from the Amora Rav, who has Smicha from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So the derech, the methodology of Torah Shebaal Peh in the Talmud Bavli is clearly Ribuyim and Miutim, additions and deletions. And that is the main way that we think Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. So how come Rabbi Shmuel's list snuck into the Siddur? That's a different question. How did that make it into the Siddur? It happens to be an introduction to the Medrash Halakha of Sefer Vayikra. And in Sefer Vayikra, we want that before we start Pesukah Zimra, there should be, after we have said Birkat HaTorah in the morning, as part of the Birkot HaShachar, so there was we respond immediately with a Mishnah from Masechet Peah, Eilu Dvarim She'en Lahem Shi'ur, HaPeah VaBikurim. I'm sorry, first we respond with Psukim from Birkat Kohanim, and then we respond with a Mishnah from Masechet Peah. Fine, but that's a representative of Torah Shebichtav and a representative of Torah Shebalpeh. Every morning the same delegation. As if to say, Birkat HaTorah is basically a double-edged bracha, the two brachot, Amlamei Torah Lamo Yisrael, Anasha Bachabanu, two brachot, one is for Torah Shebichtav, one Torah Shebalpeh. Then it catches that the Rambam believes that Birkat HaTorah is three different brachot, and it all hinges on a Vav HaChibur. We say, Brachat Hashem Elokeinu Olam, Asher Kishanu Mitzvah V'tzivanu Lasok B'Divrei Torah. Is that the end of the bracha, or the middle? If you continue, like Ashkenazim do, V'Ha'arev Na'Hashem Elokeinu with a Vav, you're in the middle of a bracha. But the Rambam says there's no Vav. It's Ha'arev Na'Hashem Elokeinu. You've come to the end of the bracha, and now you're starting bracha number two, and then there's number three. So if there's one, two, and three, so the Birkat HaTorah has three portions to it. Why three? Because the Rambam believes that Torah study is divided into three. One is Torah Mikra, which is Tanakh. Second is Mishnah, and the third is Talmud. So even though Mishnah and Talmud are both Torah Shebal Peh, but they're different. Mishnah means codified law, and Talmud means analysis. It's two different things. So in the morning, we have another response to Birkat HaTorah. We have the Psukim of Korbanot and Ktoret, and then we have the Mishnah of Ezel Mekoman Shel Zvachim, which is Perakei Masechet Zvachim, and then we have Talmud, which is the introduction to the Medrash Halacha of Sefer Vayikra. And that's Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Koshel Omer, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Shloshes Remidot Shatoran Nedreshet. So we have like a delegation of Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud every morning, all relating to Korbanot, because as an intro to Tefillah, because Tefillah is in place of Korban. So that's how that works out. That's how Rabbi Shmuel, whose tools don't really make it in the Gemara learning, but made it in the Siddur. Okay, fine. It's very compact. 13 midot. I'm just jumping now. Just remind me where I am afterwards. Right, Rivka? Just hold the place for me. Put your finger. Right, hold the place. In the song that we sing, Echad Miyodea, so in my house, we were already through by the end of the songs there. So we used to start Echad Miyodea with Shlosh Asar Miyodea. You figure you get them all in anyway, right? Well, Chad Gadya, start with the Malach HaMavet. Start with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Both the Kadosh Baruch Hu, B'shachat the Malach HaMavet, the Shachat the Sheichet, the Shachat the Tura, the Shachat the Maya. You get it all in, right? And in the end, you sing once. Chad Gadya, my wife doesn't like this at all. We're on the fifth gear in the fast track, you know, the express lane. So it's Shlosha Asar Midaya, the 13 attributes. Which midot are we talking about? There's 13 attributes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shem Hashem Kel Rachum B'Chanun, and there's 13 principles, midot, Shatoran Adreshet. Which Shlosha Asar Midaya are we talking, did the Paitan have in mind when he composed the poem, Echad Miyadeh? Is it a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his attributes with a capital H, his? Or is it a reference to the 13 modes or rules of dissecting the psukim for purposes of Medrash Halacha? And by the way, it can go each way. Because there are those numbers that speak about Torah, right? Where it says, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. So Torah is there. So maybe the 13 is the 13 midot, Shatoran Udreshet. It could be, it's plausible. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there also, right? Echad Miyodea, and Shnei Luchot HaBrit. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu also factors into the... So it's just not sure. I don't have an answer. All I do is I'm raising it that it could be, you know, share both. And that's all. And that's all. All right, close that window. Where am I? Okay. We're back to... I knew it was going to happen. No. Before I said Shlosha Midaya, Right. Back, I know where we are. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Right. No, we explained that. We explained the Siddur. Right. The whole business of I'm at the point of the of understanding the Mechilta. So we said that the Mechilta standard is Mechilta of Rabbi Shmuel. But the Rambam does tell us, it is an introduction to the Mishnah Torah, that there's a parallel Mechilta on Sefer Shmot that reflects the thinking and methodology of Rabbi Akiva. And it's called Mechilta de Rajbi, Mechilta Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, also a student of Rabbi Akiva. And for 700 years, we didn't have the book. We knew of its existence, we didn't have the book. Why didn't we have the book? Apparently it wasn't copied sufficient amount of times. And because of all the pogroms, whatever there was got burnt and destroyed. And here, Rav David Zvi Hoffman in Berlin, using whatever he uses, methodology, identifies some of the fragments of the Gniza as the Mechilta de Rajbi of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. That's an important find. Why? Because 1947, Rav Menachem Kasher, Zichron Levracha, who was the famous editor, the pioneer and editor of the Torah Shlema project, which began in his lifetime, 1944. He never saw the end of it. Years later, but his sons did take over and finish it. It's an anthology of every medrash in the world that was ever said about every pasuk in Chumash. So Rav Menachem Kasher, he puts out a book called Harambam Vamechilta de Rajbi, where he identifies 50 locations where up until now we did not know where the Rambam sourced a particular halakha, and now we see it's black and white, it's in the Mechilta de Rashbi. One of the examples is this example. The Mechilta de Rashbi, the Mechilta of Shimon Bar Yochai, clearly has the medrash of connecting Zachor et Hayom Hazeh Sheh Yatzatem Mitzrayim with Zachor et Yom Shabbat Lekacho. The Rambam didn't make it up. He had a source. And all the wonderful chidushim and drushes that all the people have in the last 700 years, it's Torah, but don't pin it on the Rambam. It's the source is the Mechilta, the Rashbi. It has a source. And the fact that the Rambam didn't say Ani Omer or Yireli was an indication that he had a source. And now we have the source. We know exactly where it's from. Okay. Another point here is if you go back to the source number one, the fourth paragraph, where it says Dinei HaMitzvah. The fourth paragraph, it says Dinei HaMitzvah. It says, Kegon HaSeder SheChayavim Yisrael Asot B'Layla Zeh. The order that Am Yisrael is supposed to perform on this night, B'inyan Se'udatan, the meal, the Kosel Chalyayin, SheChayavim Lishtot V'Shiuran, the amount of cups of wine that you're obligated to drink, and the measure, the quantitative measure, Umezigatan, and the pouring of the wine, the siduran, and all the order of everything. So all this, these are dinim that talked about in the last chapter of Masechet Pesachim. Fine. Who made up the word seder? Why do we call it a seder? So seder, the grandmother didn't make it up, didn't come from the Bubba. The halacha calls it a seder. It's called a seder. And if it's called a seder, it's called a seder because things are supposed to be done in order. Now, if you're from the Frankfurt stock, this doesn't make sense because everything's supposed to be done in order. So, manishtan alayla zem, you call alaylot, that tonight we call it a seder. Every night's a seder. So, you don't understand. Why is this night a seder? There's a mitzvah, for example, that we know we're supposed to give truma to the Kohen, and Maisa Rishon to the Levi, and the Maza Sheni, we're supposed to bring up to Yerushalayim 4 out of the 7 years of the Shemitah year, and 2 of them, instead of Maza Sheni, we have Maser to the poor people, Maser Ani. So we have these mitzvahs are independent mitzvot, spread out in the Chumash, where, and then before we know about that, there's even a concept of giving the Truma to Kayan, and the Maser Rishon to the Levi, and the Maser Sheni. There's a mitzvah found in Sefer Shmot. Before any of these Truma mitzvahs are given, and Maser mitzvahs are given, which in Bar Midbar and Devarim, there's a mitzvah in Parshat Mishpatim, Meleyatcha v'dematcha lo ta'acher. Do not delay those mitzvot of the field. You don't even know yet what the mitzvot of the field are. The Torah never told us yet that there are such mitzvot. You would expect that if there's going to be a mitzvah, that now you have three mitzvot, do it A, B, C, they come in order. First tell me that is A, and there's B, and there's C, and then follow up by saying, and fulfill it in its order. Here, Torah does it out of order. Torah says, don't delay the order. Of what? Of the agricultural mitzvot. What are they? Hang in there. Wait till Sefer Bamidbar, Sefer Dvarim, you'll hear all about it. But just know that even though their presentation in the Chumash may be out of order, when you perform them, they should be in order. Of Truma to the Kayan, Levi to Maser Rishon, and then Maser Sheni, so on. And by the way, this mitzvah of B'le'atcha v'demacha lo ta'acher does not disqualify the mitzvot if they're done out of order. It means if you gave the Levi the Maser Rishon first, and then you give the Kayan, you don't have to give them again. So the mitzvah of B'le'atcha v'demacha lo ta'acher is what's called l'chatchila. This is the way it should be done. Fine. So that's like a uniqueness. The Torah says, do it in order. But there are three concepts in halacha that if done out of order, it's as if you didn't even do it at all. One is, Chazal say, 120 kenim, that's not the Knesset here, but the Anshe Knesset Hagdola, tiknu 18 brachot al ha-seder. They established the 18 al ha-seder, which means that when you daven 18 tefillat amidah, if you say every single bracha, but in a completely different, mixed up order, you didn't daven. You have to daven again. Why not? I asked for this, I asked for that. What's the difference, which position in the Shmoneh Esrei I asked it for? The Gemara says in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, that the order tells a story as well. Not only does each individual bracha have a message, but the sequential order is also of great significance. So significant that if you daven out of order, you didn't daven. Has to be Al HaSeder. The second is the order of the Kohen Gadol's activity on Yom Kippur. It has to be Lefi HaSeder. And that's why the Kohen Gadol was prepped, and that's why he needed 7 days to take out of his house. So he should do a review. And it's based on the 7 days of Miluim that the Kohanim were in preparation for the Mishkan. He has to have, let's just use the baseball expression, spring training. He has to get into shape for the Avodah of Yom Kippurim. And has to be according to the order, and not the order of the Chumash, but the Torah Shabbat Peh interjects some change, and that causes a major rupture between the Tzedokim and the Chachamenu on this issue. And it might even seem to be a very, very minute point, whether the shovel of the Torah was left in the Kodesh Kodashim, and the Kohen Gadol goes out, and then he has to go in. Each time he goes out and in the Kodesh Kodashim, it's a change of clothing, it's Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim, washing the hands and feet, and going to the mikveh. So there's a tradition that the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur has to go to the mikveh 5 times and wash his hands 10 times before and after each change of clothing. According to the Chumash, it's only 6 times. It's three tefillah, three mikvah, and 6 times. So artificially, the Torah Shabbat Peh had to create a scenario of in and out an extra 2 times in order to get to the 5 and 10. Ad kedekav. So that's the order. And because the Kohen Gadol is doing things that are away from the eye of everyone, so they made him swear before Yom Kippur that he's going to do it according to the way Chazal are teaching him how to do it. The order is extreme significance. The Seder of Avodat Yom Kippurim. And the other is Leila Seder. Leila Seder has to be done in order. And that's why it's called Seder. And that's why great poets compose poems with rhyme and rhythm so that the average person should know the Seder. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz has meter to it, has rhyme scheme to it. And every kindergarten kid knows it. Because it goes with a niggun, you know, whatever niggun you were taught when you were a kid. It's interesting that in Rav Menachem Kasher's project of 1960, Haggadah Shleima, which is a Haggadah, which is all-encompassing, he has a very half the book there is his introduction, and he shows that there were about 14, 15 different poems that the Jewish communities had, that not everybody had what we sing today, Kadesh, Karpas, Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rachatz, and so on. But there were variations. And the reason that there were variations is, first of all, not everybody knew that the other communities half around the world, they composed poems, so they composed their own poems. And each poet, you know, with his own talent and ability, composed poems. But what's very strange is that here and there, the poems do not reflect the identical order. And that opens up one's eyes wide. Maybe there's a change in the order for some good reason. Maybe there are different, maybe it's machloket about the order. So now you're all invited to my Shabbos Agolas Drasha, right? Because the question is, when do you do yachatz? What's yachatz? Break the matzah. What big deal, right? Break the matzah. When do you do yachatz? When do we all do yachatz? What? Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, yachatz. So it's before Magid. So before you say Holach Manya, that's where you break the matzah, and you put the larger part in some, you know, bag that says on it Afikoymen, so your grandchildren can steal it, right? Unless you chain it. Okay? My father, Shalom, you know, we used to hide the Afikoymen, and then starts the negotiations, right? My father said, you know, there was a certain, what's called a raf, a level, where beyond that, you know, you blew it. Because he would just take out a matzah from the box and start eating it. It doesn't have to be that matzah. What happens if you don't find the Afrikaimen? The kids hit the Afrikaimen and went to sleep. You can't wake them up. You take a matzah out of the box, you eat it. That's all. The matzah Afrikaimen. So we knew that there was a limit, there was a breaking point, you know, where you're going to go. And my father, Shalom, used to tell us that his father, the Seder, the standard gift was called a loch van a bagel, the whole of the bagel. Right? But my brother-in-law told me that you're not allowed to tell corny jokes on Pesach because of kidneys. Chash kidney. No, for Pesach you're allowed to say it too. For Pesach you can say all the corny jokes you want. I'm machber the whole year on corny jokes. So that's the idea of the Seder. So I'm going to talk about Yachatz, that yes, that's what we do Yachatz. We're going to see the Rambam doesn't have Yachatz over there. The Rambam has Magid, all Haggadah. And then, before Moitzi Matzah, the Rambam breaks the Matzah. Now the Rambam doesn't start with three Matzahs, by the way, like we do. The Rambam starts with two Matzahs, which is the minhag of the Vilna Gaon. There's some people here in Yerushalayim, Shaarei Chesed, who conduct themselves accordingly. And the Yemenite Jews start with two matzahs. And then you break one matzah before the Moitzi Matzah. Before the Moitzi Matzah. That's where the Yachatz is. So if Yachatz is there, and it's not where we have it, after Karpas, before Magid, the poem's going to be different. The poem's going to be different. And if you want to know what the difference between these two Yachatz is, you're going to have to come to the Shir, to the Drosha. But I'm going to give you a sneak preview of something. Fuel for thought. The idea of this drasha came to me many years ago, and it's something I gave over in Ramot, but every in Beit Midrash Lelo Chidush, you know, you always patch up and you always amplify as the years go on. But there could be no greater place of inspiration for a Shabbos HaGadol drasha in the fall, on the week of Parshat Vayishlach. What in the world am I thinking, Pesach? Shabbos HaGadol drasha, 39,000 feet in the air, in the business section of a 747 in the bubble, sitting next to Rabbi Zvulun Charlap. Those of you who remember him, he was the dean of Ritz, the Menahel of Ritz at the time, and his seasoned shul rabbi, Young Israel of Mashula Parkway in Bronx, and he's a darshan. He had drushes, just effervescent drushes. Whenever you talk to him, he had drushes. So he was telling me this drusha that he had for this coming Shabbat, for Yishlach, on Yaakov Avinu. You ever notice that he split his family twice? He splits his family at the beginning of the parsha. Im yavo Esav al machana achatz v'ikau v'ya machana nashar lifleita. That he's fearful that he's not going to survive the encounter of Esav. So he has an exit strategy. That's all he has. It says v'yachatz. He divides the family, and at least if one part of his attack, the other part will flee. So there's survival. And then in the middle of the parsha, when finally Yaakov meets up with Esav, and he's already blessed with many of the guarantees of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's much more optimistic, and he presents his family before Esav, it says, Vayachat et ha-yaladim. He divides the children and has them all positioned nicely as they're going to parade before Esav. It's a completely different vayachatz, completely different mood of Yaakov Avinu. It's Yaakov Avinu who's showing Esav who's taking over Eretz, who really is going to be the boss in Eretz Yisrael, who's really going to be taking over, and so on. So there's a yachatz of galut, of a mentality of galut. There's a yachatz of a mentality of gula. And I told Rabbi Chalap right then and there, I have a Shabbos HaGolah drasha. Because I knew the machloket between where you do yachatz, and is yachatz done as an expression of halach ma'anya, as poor man's bread, da'achala b'mitzrayim, the reflective of the galut, or is it yachatz after magid of Gal Yisrael? It's to the... Nice drasha? Now you don't have to come. That's all. And there's a lot of schmaltz in between. A lot of schmaltz in between, okay? But that's a 39,000 feet in the air drasha. Pretty good. So this reflected in different poems. In different poems where the yachatz was. So that's why the poetry is important. It is important. And now we're going to see the just a few minutes, the source number 3, where the Rambam says, Kol mi shelo amar shloshat varim elu b'leil chamishasar lo yatzai deicha batov. Whoever does not explain these three matters on the night of the 15th, he didn't fulfill his obligation. Ve'elohen, Pesach matzah umaror. Now the Rambam presents the Leil HaSeder as if Beit HaMikdash is up and running, and then later follows through and says, by the way, now there's no Beit HaMikdash, so we change a little bit. So he says, Pesach al shem shepasach amakom baruch hu abatei avoteinu b'mitzrayim. The reason why we eat Korban Pesach, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu skipped over, okay. So this, as if Korban Pesach is on the table. And then he brings a pasuk, v'amartem zeh pesach l'Hashem. Merorim, which is the biblical expression. Torah never says maror, it says amatzot umrorim yochluhu. And the reason is, because maror is not one vegetable, many different vegetables qualify for maror. As the Mishnah tells us, ve'elu heinam marorim, the different things you can use for maror. So that's why it's in plural. Al shem shemeru avot mitzrayim etchayei avoteinu b'mitzrayim. Matzah al shem shenigalu, because we were redeemed. Udvarim elu kulan nikrin hagada. All of these matters, this is what's called the Haggadah. Now, one second. When we say this section of Rabbi Gamliel, when Gamliel Haya Omer, the order is Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. Why does the Rambam have Pesach, Moror, and Matzah? Well, at the end of Hilchos Chametz and Matzah, where he gives us the Seder of today, a non-Beit HaMikdash season of a Seder, it's according to our Haggadah, exactly what we have. Pesach, Matzah, Maror. But when Beit HaMikdash stood, there is no independent mitzvah to eat Maror. Maror is like, you know, horseradish with gefilte fish. It's chareim. It's like the charoset, basically. Maror was just an add-on to the Korban Pesach. Al matzot umrorim yochlu. There's no independent mitzvah to eat Maror. You eat the Maror together with the Korban Pesach. No, the pasuk says matzah also, but matzah is an independent pasuk. But erev tochlu matzot, you have to eat matzah this evening. So therefore, the order that the Rambam has when Beit HaMikdash stood was Pesach hyphenated moror or merorim, and then afterwards matzah. But today, after Churban Havayit, there is no Korban Pesach, so we relate to Korban Pesach once upon a time. Pesach shayu avoteinu ochlim bezman shebeit HaMikdash haya kayam. And now matzah remains a biblical mitzvah, so that precedes a rabbinic mitzvah. Chazal said, now that there's no Korban Pesach, as a rabbinic add-on, we should eat Moror, to remember the Korban Pesach. But it's only the Rabbanan, it's only rabbinic. So we explain the matzah before the Moror in our Seder. But what does he mean when he says, Dvarim elu kulan hanikra'im Haggadah? Or a better question, on the first line, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu, lo yatzai dechavato. Which obligation are we talking about? So the Rav Zichron LeBracha said, there are two possibilities. One is, the Rambam is saying that normally when you do a mitzvah, so it is a good thing to try to figure out what did the Kadosh Baruch Hu have in mind in the mitzvah for you? What's called ta'ameh mitzvot, mitzvah rationale. Naseh v'nishma. We should try to figure out what it is. But what if you don't understand, or you don't have a clue what the mitzvah is, but you do it anyway, you do have a fulfillment of the mitzvah. So maybe Rabbi Gamliel came to suggest that with Pesach, Matzah, Maror, if you don't get into the explanation of the mitzvah, it's not good enough just to have eaten the Pesach, Matzah, Maror. You have to explain it as well. That's the chuvah. The chuvah is the very mitzvah of eating Pesach, Korban Pesach, eating matzah, eating maror. That it goes along with the explanation. Kol shelo amar, which means whoever doesn't explain these mitzvot. The other possibility is that the real fulfillment of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is not the storytelling, but it's the delving into the mitzvot that bring out the story. And that's why the Chacham, the Ben HaChacham, he really asked the good question. Ma ha'edot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Hashem Elokeinu etchem. What are the dinim? Let's get into the dinim and the halachot, and then we'll understand the story. We'll see how the story really becomes a result of the discussion of the mitzvot of the day, as opposed to the Tam who says, Mazo, what's going on here? So you tell him a story. It's storytelling. That's all. But the Chacham's not asking for storytelling. So that's where we see that the manishtana are the questions of the Ben HaChacham. Because what are we asking? We're asking about chametz and matzah, we're asking about moror, we're asking about tibul, we're asking about a seva. And in days of Beit Mikdash, shebechol ha'leilot anu ochlim basar tzli shaluk u'mevushal, halayla hazeh kulo tzli. You're asking about the Korban Pesach. So that's really the questions of the manishtana, fundamentally the questions of the Ben HaChacham. So why do we teach the three-year-olds in kindergarten to like a parrot to say over? Because obviously he's the Ben HaChacham, right? It's like I once asked some woman on the Rehov Ha'ilui in Kiryat Moshe, do you know who the Ilui was? And she said, yeah, my baby. What's the Shaila? It wasn't even a question. So that we do. We pump into the questions of the manishtana. The manishtana are the questions of the Ben HaChacham. Of the halachot, and they do have an answer. People say we don't answer the questions. Of course, we answer the questions later on in the Haggadah. Those are the answers. But the Rav went further, and he said that when a slave is released from slavery, and there are many examples of such moments in history. You could take the blacks in America, for example, right? I mean, it took about 100 years for the Americans to free the blacks, you know, from 1865 to 1965, till Johnson's civil rights laws. But nevertheless, when blacks became free, so many of them migrated to the north, and they even changed their names. And you know, you don't have this concept of in the black community as a culture to remember the good old days. You know, when we were down in South Carolina. You know, they don't want to. That's why when the movie Roots was written, it became a big bestseller because it was a big chiddush. There's a big chiddush, you know, somebody actually plowed back, right? I mean, imagine Obama's going to go back to Kenya, you know, he's not going to do it. He doesn't see any reason to do something like that. So you want to forget about your past. Not only you want to forget about your past, because as a slave you owned nothing, so now you have this very big, let's just say, yetzahara. You want to have things that you own. And because you want to have things and you're starving for possessions and money and wealth, it's very difficult for you to share with others because every time you give away, it's less in your account. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that this should not happen to Am Yisrael. We came out of Mitzrayim. So we were given three mitzvot, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So number one, Maror teaches us, don't forget about where we came from. It's extremely important to appreciate the freedom against the background of what it was to be a slave. And that's why the halacha says, "Matchil b'gnut u'misayim b'shevach." We begin with the bad times. The bad times expresses itself both politically, avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim, and theologically, "Matchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avotenu." So Terach was a idol worshiper. So you know you're going to put down a shidduch form. You know, who is a great grandfather? You'll start with Avram Avinu. You know Terach, you know, he's not on the list, but he's on the list. He's on the list. He was a pagan worshiper. And we have to understand that's where we came from. And Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim weren't doing much better. Yes, v'achshav kervano makol navodato. There was Maimon Har Sinai and things changed. But you can appreciate that kind of chirut, that kind of freedom against the background of what once was. So that's why Maror. Pesach became the classic sharing experience. So first of all, the mitzvah of matzah is identified as lechem oni, poor man's bread. People think, using Western standards, that you measure the success of a person by the wealthiest person. The person has the most money, the most homes, the most possessions, the most stocks and bonds, and so on. That's not how HaKadosh Baruch Hu measures the success of an individual. It's not relevant. It's not a criteria. You can get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a poor person. Of course, the Gemara has different expressions of what understandings of what lechem oni might be. Lechem she'onim alav dvarim arbe. It's a bread that we talk a lot about it. From the word aniya, fine. I have a different expression, very modern. Lechem shehamevi lidei oni. If you finish your Pesach shopping, you're broke. But lechem oni, poor man's bread. Poor man's bread teaches you that wealth is not a goal. It's not a, for sure not a spiritual goal. Not gone. That's not how Kadosh Baruch Hu sees us. And whatever you have, share. That's Pesach. Pesach is a sharing experience. And if Am Yisrael can march on with the themes of Pesach Matzah Maror after Yitziat Mitzrayim, then this is going to be a an Am Kadosh. An Am Kadosh. You know, the last source, in source number 6, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell Paro, V'amarta el Paro, Kol Ma'ashem, B'ni B'chori Yisrael. Am Yisrael is the Bechor of all the nations. The Bechor means basically the trailblazer here, the trailblazer. And it's not just that we should be with the proper attitudes and so on, but you know we have something to project to the world as, at large. And to say that we've done a good job or not remains is an open question. In some areas, I think Jewish values have succeeded in making it to the nations of the world, but not in all the values. I dare say that some of the Western values have corrupted some of the authentic Jewish values, but that's not new either, because in the Hashmonaim era, Hellenism did that as well. So it's something we actually have to fight. And it's something that, you know, when I talk to people in Chutz La'aretz about Aliyah, it's a real sore point, because you know, a lot of times, look what I have here. That's a nice house and this and that. So, you know, in the 1950s, it was a hard argument to find to argue with. But today, hey, buddy, you can have a nice house here too. You know, there's really not much left. Not much left, except for Carvel ice cream cake. That yeah, but yeah, we had Carvel ice cream cake here, but it closed. You know, never went into Golis again. What? Right, they brought that here once also, but so there's still a reason why to, you know, zift over for you know some of these Chazarai things, but in all seriousness, we look at Pesach this year, Tavshin Ayin Zayin. I mean, it's not the Pesach of once upon a time ago, of being able to sit down to let a seder benacha. We'll have a shir next week, but in case I don't see some of you, I'll still already extend a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Kasher, it's going to be without a doubt. You can't go wrong in this city. You can't go wrong in the city with 3 Ashkachot on Economica for Pesach. You know, it's don't drink it. It's going to be a kosher, but it should be Sameach. We had a Nebuch a few years ago, a Pigu on Leila Seder, Netanya, where we all felt it, and we met. That's what we need. We need to be a Pesach Sameach. All right, so whoever can come next week, I'll be here. Because I don't do any cleaning anyway.